Okay, so let's begin. I want to welcome everyone to our first Parents on Learning. It's something that we really value so much at the yeshiva. It's actually very unique. I remember when Yeshiva University came for their site visit for us, they really thought this should be like the precedent for every program in Israel. And for us, it's not such a chiddush. It's not such a, what do you call it, new idea, because it's so important from our standpoint that our parents are part of the Year in Israel experience. Rather than view it as shipping your kids off to Israel and then they kind of live in this bubble, we think it's very important that our parents join us throughout the year and kind of experience a little bit what it's like to learn at the yeshiva. And then our hope is to build off this experience into all of our students as much as possible, learning with their parents at least once a week. We've formed many, many chavrusas over the years where parents and their kids learn together to this day. We think it's a tremendous value. So that's kind of what was the genesis of this idea. Obviously, this year, it's a little different to how we're starting. Usually what we do is we're obviously in the Beis Medrash, and the guys spread out all over the Beis Medrash, which we will do soon, and prepare with their parents. And then we switch over to Facebook Live. I can tell you when we first started doing this, there was no Zoom to speak of, or no one had heard of it. Now this seems like a very good format, and I think it'll work well for what we want to accomplish tonight. So in general, just to kind of get a sense of the format, so usually in the Beis Medrash, we kind of discuss the go over the sources. The students ask questions, and parents are also definitely invited to ask questions as well. And so we want to make sure it's a not a lecture, but a participatory experience. Also, because of we're trying to keep our Zoom things 45 minutes as a good chunk. So I chose a topic that I'd say is has a couple important points that we should be able to give over in, or get through in about 45 minutes. And just as a little background of this topic, I think this topic highlights one aspect of the yeshiva, which is we kind of pride ourselves on being very analytical, and often we enjoy delving into topics where a person may not think it's such a big deal. Whenever I ask people, do you ever actually people pay attention to the shofar blasts? But the idea of a breath, that one breath between the Shvarim and the Trua, which we're going to focus on today, seems like such a inconsequential, unimportant aspect of the entire experience of Shofar. And so what we like to do is we like to discuss elevating beyond what's ceremony and symbolic into what actually has a halachic structure, and to get a little bit into the mindset of what was the thought process to some of these conclusions. So that's kind of like what we're going to be doing today. We'll see if what you guys think. Okay. So we'll start off with the Rambam in Hilchos Shofar, Perek Gimel. And the Rambam in Perek Gimel, Halacha Beis, basically, just as an aside, usually the students read. It's just this format doesn't work well for it, so I'm just going to read the sources, but I promise you in general, the guys will be reading. Okay, so the Rambam explains that the Torah tells us Trua. Okay, the Torah commands us to blow this Trua blast. Now, it's so critical that when you approach an area, and this is something we discuss a lot in philosophy, you have to get rid of your preconceived notions, okay? Today, when we hear the word Trua, so automatically, assuming for Ashkenazim here, we automatically think of like short blasts coming out of a shofar, okay? I'm not going to imitate it because it'll sound terrible, but that's what people think of, okay? But that's not what the Torah says. The Torah says Trua, and this is actually a much more complex sugya I'm actually taking up with my shir next week. Trua itself, it's unclear what that referred to. Okay, so the Rambam explains the Trua that's in the Torah, nistapik lano basafik. There's a question. There's a doubt as to what exactly it is. Okay, and he says ve'ein ani yodin heyachi. Also, I do apologize. I read yeshivish. I do know in Israel this is not the proper way to pronounce Hebrew, and I'm a very, very uptight bal kore. I'm that guy who gets very frustrated when someone lanes and misses one. A shva, but it's just the way I was raised. So I do apologize. I've tried it. I've tried, when I give shiurim be'ivrit, I try my best, but inevitably it always fails. Anyway, So imhi hayilala shemiyalin hanashim b'niyasim b'eish shemiyavim ohanacha kederek shanech adam pam achar pam kishiyadag libo midavar gada. Okay, so this is straight from the Gemara. The Gemara explains that there are two sounds. There's what's called yilala, which if you ever heard the that Middle Eastern, screaming, you know, when they're celebrating, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, that sound? Yeah. But, yeah, exactly. So that's what the Gemara is referring to. So is it short sounds like that? Or is it this longer crying, okay? So now you can think to yourself, what we hear today, is the trua what we call the trua today, or is the trua what we call the shvarim today? So whatever you want to picture in your mind, there's two possible sounds. It's either the short sound, or it's the, we'll call it, medium-sized sound. And then the Rambam says at the end, O shnehem ke'echad ha'anacha v'hayilala shedarcha lovo achareya hein hanikron trua. So the other possibility is that it's not just, right, Yulia, exactly. It's not the, it's both. It's actually, I'm not going to explain exactly what that is yet, but that sound is actually both the longer cry into the shorter cry, okay? And the Rambam explains, Shekein derech adoeg, when you worry, you go from the longer sound to the shorter sound. Okay, so basically what the Rambam is explaining is that there was some type of doubt as to what the sound is, and as a result, what do we do today? So as he explains over here, he says, Hayalala hish anukorin shrua, right? Vanacha zu achar zu hish anukorin osa shlosha shvarim, nimsa seret kios kachu. So the Yalala we call shrua, the other one we call shvarim. So what do we do? So he explains we do three sets. First we do tkia shvarim shrua tkia, which we call, to make it simple as an acronym, tashrat. And then we have a tkia shvarim tkia, which is tashat. And then a tkia shrua tkia, which is a tarat. Okay, I'm just going to use those terms because it's just easier that way. So there's three sets of sounds, tashrat, tashat, and tarat. Okay, so far there should be no questions because we really haven't done anything that's mind-blowing yet. Okay, so here's where things get interesting. Okay, so in that set of tashrat, okay, the question comes up is as follows. We know that normally when you hear the person blowing shofar, what will they do? They'll take a breath between, let's say, the tekiah and the shvarim, okay? So, as we all know, there's someone up there who calls out tekiah, right? And then what does the Baal Tekiah do? He blows the long shofar blast, and then he'll say shvarim. In that time, usually what's he doing? He's taking a breath, which he should do, as you'll see. So a breath is taken between each shofar blast, okay? Now, within the shofar blast, for instance, within a shvarim itself, he should not take a breath, okay? There's no idea of breathing when a person does a shvarim or a shrua. It should come out as one breath. So if you're blowing, let's say, three shvarim, right, do, there should be no interruption, and it's a serious halakha question if that happens, but there should not be an interruption within or intra sound. So again, between each type of sound, there's a breath. Within the sound itself, we don't breathe, okay? It's all in one breath, okay? Again, none of this should sound like any brilliant insight. However, the Ramban asks the following question. The question comes up, what about between the Shvarim and the Trua in that Tashrat set? Okay? Now, before you say to yourself, who cares? Like, what's the difference? Right? Well, honestly, like, do we really care about that? Especially if you're in, you know, it probably won't happen this year, but like, you know, it's already 3 hours of Rosh Hashanah davening. Like, my God, I've been sitting here for a long time. I'm really going to care about taking a breath between a Shvarim and a Trua. Like, it seems like such an inconsequential thing. And yet, as you'll see, the Ramban is very vehemently opposed to what would very be an intuitive possibility. So what does he say? He says, "Mistava she'ein lahasik klal b'tashrat bein shvarim l'truos." Okay, he says, do not take a breath between the shvarim and the trua. So when the Baal Tekiah blows a tashrat, he'll blow a tekiah, breathe, shvarim trua, breathe, and then tekiah. That's how we should do it. Okay, why? So since it's really the longer and shorter sound together, therefore it's one trua. Okay, again, his language is very important. In other words, by having the longer and the shorter sound together, they form one trua sound. So just like I would never take a breath within the trua, like I said before, you never take a breath within it, So too, I'm not going to take a breath between the Shvarim and the Trua, because that would be breaking up the Trua sound. Okay? And not only that, he goes as far as to say, V'im hifsik, nifsika, v'lesa l'shiurev ein ole. It's so bad that if the Baal Tokea had the nerve to take a breath between the Shvarim and the Trua, he's got a serious problem. He's got to start over again. It's a mistake because he created a hefsik, a break, between one and the other. Okay? So again, what does the Ramban maintain? He says, don't take a breath between the Shvarim and the Trua of Tashrat, right? And he considers the Shvarim and Trua and the set as one Trua, okay? So now comes the other position, which is Tosfos. And Tosfos says, he says, Rabbeinu Tam in source number 3, Rabbeinu Tam Zal, Kasa B'tshuva de Shlosh Shvarim B'Neshima Achas Avdina Lahu De B'Makom Trua Ninhu, right? Aval Shlosh Shvarim B'Trua De Tashrat Lo Mistaber De Genuchi V'Yiluli B'Chad Neshima Lo Avdi Inshi. The Tosfos is very funny. He says, the reason you should take a breath, you must take a breath between your Shvarim and your Trua, because when a person cries, they go from a longer cry, and then they breathe, and then they go into a shorter cry. So a person naturally takes a breath between the longer cry and the shorter cry. So that should be reflected in the very Shvarim Trua and the Tashrat set. You should take a breath between the two, okay? To which the Ramban replies and says, that's ridiculous, okay? In source number 4, he basically says that's insane. He says, over here where I'm highlighting, he says, "V'ein dvar of nechonim." This is not correct. "Deha trua hi." Okay. "V'ef shalios ba hefsek b'shun panim." He says, "This is one note, and we don't interrupt between the two." Okay. So now, at this point, it sounds like we have a very uninteresting debate. Who the heck cares? Does it really matter so much whether you have a breath between the Shvarim and the Trua? Like, okay, like the Ramban. Why don't Rabbeinu Tam say to the Ramban, "Listen, relax, take it easy. You know what it called? Take some anti-anxiety medication. It'll bring it down a little bit. It'll be much more comfortable." And it's not that big of a deal, okay? Why are they so insistent on staking out these positions? And our job, and what we do here at the yeshiva, is to really delve into and try to, what we call, define and offer a conceptual analysis of the basis of each position. But before we go into that and offer possibilities, there's one more thing I think we need to know, which is, it sounds like a different debate, but it relates directly to this one, which is as follows, okay? In source number 5, the Gemara Yerushalmi tells us, okay, that if a person blew, okay, let's say the Baal Tokea was a, you know, a show-off. And what did he do? He gets up there, and he blows an entire, let's say, Tashat set, Tekiah, Shvarim, Tekiah, with one breath. Meaning he never stops between the Tekiah and the Shvarim and the Tekiah. In one breath, he's able to get out the whole thing. He wants to show off. He doesn't smoke. He's got great lungs. He's showing everybody, I'm the best Baal Tokea in the world. And how does he prove it? He doesn't need to stop for a breath. So as I mentioned in English over here, the Yerushalmi maintains that he would not have to go back again. It's not the ideal, but even though he didn't breathe between the Tekiah and the Shvarim and the Tekiah, it's still considered a good set of sounds. Whereas the Bavli says no. The Talmud Bavli says that you must have a breath between each sound that you do. It would be a big problem if you didn't do that. So again, you have this debate between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. The Yerushalmi says that if I blow a whole set of sounds, if I blow a whole set of sounds, it's perfectly fine without a breath. Whereas the Bavli says, no, I must breathe between each specific sound. So what we have to understand is, what's the nature of the debate between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli? Like, why should it make a difference? Okay? And then also, that'll help us understand what's the rationale for the debate between the Ramban and Rabbeinu Tam. I think what Ezra's saying is like this. What he's saying is that the Yerushalmi makes a lot of sense. If anyone is a musician here, I think they could definitely appreciate this. It's not like some sort of deep musical point. But the Yerushalmi is going to say is that a breath is very good, right? But ultimately, what differentiates one note from the other? The very note itself. So as long as I can hear a tekiah and a shvarim, I know by definition when I go from the tekiah to the shvarim, since the shvarim sounds different than the tekiah, they're separate notes. If you ask a musician when they're playing notes, if they change, let's say, the length of the note, or they change the style of the note, so then by definition, the notes are differentiated from each other. So a breath is just a better way of creating a differentiation, but ultimately, the differentiation emerges from the notes themselves. Good. But the Bavli disagrees. The Bavli doesn't like this idea. So what's the Bavli going to say? So along the lines with what Ezra's saying, what's the Bavli trying to say? What's saying is that, rather than look at it, Ezra, if you go down the road to the Yerushalmi, you're going to have to agree that the Yerushalmi looks at a set like the set of notes as being like one unit. Whereas I must produce a set of tekiah, shvarim, tekiah, right? Whereas the Bavli is going to look at each note as its own separate action. There's an action of, or as we say in halachic terms, a maisa, a maaseh. There's an act, I must blow a tekiah, I must also blow a trua, and I must also blow a tekiah. And those are three separate actions, okay? Now, if they're three separate actions, what Ezra's going to say is, I must now differentiate between each of those actions. How do I differentiate? So normally, what halacha would do is halacha would say, stop, meaning look at your watch and wait 3 seconds, or whatever, make up a number, okay? But in music, again, for the musically inclined, which I am not, there's another way you could differentiate between musical notes. And what do? You take a breath. In other words, the taking of the breath is the halachic mechanism to differentiate one act of blowing from another act of blowing. So that means the breath actually has a very important halachic function. Again, when you hear the Baal Tokeya blow shofar, according to the Bavli, that's not simply him catching his breath, although it helps. There's an actual halachic function. What it's doing is it's telling you you've completed your act, your maisa, your act of tekiah, and now you started your act of shvarim. Let's turn now to the harder issue, okay? Which is going to be the Ramban, who says that I do not take a breath. Again, they're both learning the Bavli now, which means that the breath has a function in Jewish law. And now the question is, between the Ramban and Rabbeinu Tam, do I put a breath between the Shvarim and the Trua or not? Okay? The Ramban says, I do not, right? I treat them as one. Whereas Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos says, nope, I take a breath between the two to separate them. Okay? How do we understand that debate? I definitely see how you can go down the experiential road. Actually, that being the case, I happen to agree with you. I that's the road I took. See, one road you could take, I hear what you guys are saying, which is going down the experiential road. I just found it to be a little problematic because what's going to bother me is what's pushing one side versus the other. But I think what the Rambam told us in the beginning and what the Ramban emphatically mentions in his piece, I think really gives us a structure for what I think the debate might be. And again, it's just my opinion, but this what the nature of this debate is. So the question is like this. We know, let's take the Rambam's version, we know that we're not sure what the trua sound is. We don't know what that is, okay? If that's true, that we don't know what it is, so then there's two logical expressions of that doubt, okay? One logical expression of the doubt is that, well, we don't know, so we're going to take both notes and bring them together, okay? So when I blow a tashrat, to reflect the fact that this is a suffix, I will blow both notes together. But each note still retains its individual identity. In other words, it's that I'm taking a shvarim and a trua and joining them. What we call in halacha, mitzarev. I join them together, which, by the way, raises a whole other set of problems. But by joining them together, what am I saying? I'm saying now, because of the suffix, I'll join them together, but they're not one note. Okay, it's two notes that are coexisting. So if that's the case, so then Rabbeinu Tam is going to say, we want to have a breath between them because they're not one note. Rather, just like when a person cries, normally they go from longer to shorter and take a breath, right? That should be reflected in this as well because these are two separate notes, okay? However, obviously, what's Rabbeinu Tam going to say in response to that? Excuse me, the Ramban, he's going to say no. The suffix is that this shvarim trua is one note. It's not that it's a shvarim and a trua. Rather, look at it as one word. You know, like in the Machzor, which is a mistake, the Machzor will have it listed as shvarim and then like a hyphen and then trua, okay? That's not what the Ramban would say. He would look at it as one note. It's called a shvarim trua note, okay? And if you were a musician, I don't know what it would look like on your musical thingy, but it wouldn't be two separate things. It'd be one long note. So if it's one long note, then it'll be impossible to ever have a breath between them. Because if you do that, it's not a shvarim trua anymore. The note must be done as one, okay? So what we see here is, in this type of analysis of the debate, there's a huge consequence depending on which way you go. If you're a Tosfos guy, so then what you're saying is the trua, like you were saying, Mr. Schwartzberg, the trua all along is really a suffix, a combination of both notes that are coexisting. I must have a breath between them. Whereas according to the Ramban, if you breathe in this one note, it's no different than breathing in the middle of a shvarim. You're destroying the very structure of the note itself. This could have a powerful effect on what happens in Rosh Hashanah, depending on which way you go. Okay? Is that clear? Okay, so if that's the case, okay, You're raising an excellent. Right. Well, okay. Well, you're raising an excellent point. Okay, which is kind of a segue to the last point I was going to make, but I'll say that now. We're all accustomed today, and I'm going to really emphasize that word. The custom today is to blow 100 or 101, depending on which side you hold, like blasts. Okay, understand that. That's not the obligation. The obligation is either 27 if you're a Ramban person, or 30 if you hold the other way. Okay, that's your requirement. Once you hear those, technically you're done. Okay, the idea of 100, it's based on a medrash. It's very nice. You should know historically, blowing shofar blasts after Musaf, okay, this is for those people like an academic thing, was actually one of the earliest minhagim in Jewish history. It's a very early minhag that was raised to the Gaonim, okay? So the Gaonic period, there's an early response written where the question came up that some people blew the famous Tikiya Gedola, they would blow a long shofar blast after Musaf was over, okay? And the Gaonim, the response of Rav Haigon was, that's kind of stupid. I don't know why people would do such a thing, okay? But yet, as Jews tend to do, even though it was derided, that minhag took hold. Eventually, it was justified as what's called ma'arve the satan, which means confusing the satan. And today, what we do more often than not is we jam those last few shofar blasts, right, after Musaf, okay? But it's a very interesting idea why that became a popular minhag, because shofar blasts really belong in two locations, either before Musaf or in Musaf, okay? There is no place for shofar blasts naturally after Musaf. When you finish that Musaf prayer, you're really supposed to be done with your shofar blast. But that's how minhagim evolved. So the minhag became that we do these shofar blasts to make up that totality after Musaf. So just as a historical thing, that's not actually the way it was done. It was probably done historically either all the shofar blasts in Musaf or some before and some in Musaf. But today, we tend to, push a lot of the shofar blasts after Musaf. You should also know the minhag by us in the yeshiva, which is a very popular minhag in Israel. It's becoming much more popular. It's also based on the Soloveitchik dynasty in Sephardim. We blow shofar blasts both in silent Musaf and in the repetition of Musaf, okay? Which is really cool. For those people who, whether you're a halakhic thinker or people who like a more spiritual side to things, hearing shofar blasts in the silent Musaf is actually very, very cool. It really captures a lot of what you're going through internally as you go through the Musaf. So we have very few blasts after Musaf is over. Just also as an aside, I'm a Kohen, so I can tell you that it's very tiring. I don't sit down for Chazaras HaShatz for the repetition of Musaf. So when I was a kid, it stunk because I was up there after Musaf's over listening to 40 more shofar blasts, right? But the way we do it in yeshiva, got 10 more to do at the end, and we're all done. So things, are much quicker that way. But I just want to tell you, just in the last few minutes, halachically speaking, what ended up happening, and those are the last sources on the page, what ended up happening was that the Shulchan Aruch explains, right, that the custom became, what do? Well, we do the minimal amount of blasts, okay, according to each position, which is a very good, what we call in halacha, a pshara, a good compromise. That's a classic maneuver by an Achron. The Rishonim would stake out their claim. The Ramban would say if Tosos came to his shul, he'd throw him out. And if Tosos came to Ramban's shul, he'd throw him out. But what the Shulchan Aruch says is, you know what? In the first set of blasts, do it one way. And then in the second set of blasts in Musaf, do it the other way. This way, you hear a minimum set of blasts based on each position. And then going back to your issue about Tosif, right? All these questions go by the wayside because I heard 27 kosher blasts, and I also heard 30 kosher blasts. So be aware, according to Shulchan Aruch, one of the reasons why we have these extra set of blasts is because of that breath issue. That breath issue of taking a breath between Shvarim and Truah created a huge issue of recommending that we repeat the blasts again. The Rav, as I put on that piece, didn't hold that way. Okay, Rav Soloveitchik, his Misorah was not to do it that way. And what he would do is he would always do since the majority say it should be done in one breath, that's the way it should always be done. So he didn't separate those out, okay? But the custom in most shuls, as my understanding is that they'll do one set of breaths, one set of shofar blasts with the breath between Shvarim and Truah, and another one without. So it's important to pay attention to that. There's a reason why the Baal Tokeya will interrupt himself. And finally, the last point we'll end off with is the Nafkamina becomes very interesting when it comes to, as mentioned above, the 100 Shofar Blast. Because depending on who you hold like, you can't... How are you going to end up having 100 depending on which position you hold like, okay? Because if you're doing like one way, let's say the side it holds is 30, so you could do 30, 30, 30, and then 10. But what's going to end up happening, and this is brought up by the Shla and others, is that you get into an issue of whether it's 101 or 100, the number becomes a little off, right, based on which position you hold like. So for instance, the Rav, if he insisted on not taking a breath, he'd require more shofar blast to get to the point of 100. Again, is this a game changer? Absolutely not. The 100 blast is a very old, but it is a minug. You fulfilled your obligation before you hit that number 100. So if you get nervous sometime that you didn't hear the last few blasts after Musaf, you fulfilled your obligation already. Okay, so it's a secondary thing. But ultimately, this idea of the breath between the Shvarim and Trua actually has a very, very important place in Halacha, and I think this point here really, really brings it out. Anyone have any questions?